From YouthQ, I'm Cindy Sterling. This is QCast. Dr. Carrie Savage, a YouthQ alumnus, is a brain scientist at the University of Nebraska in Lincoln. Carrie previously taught at Harvard Medical School and the University of Kansas. His expertise in brain imaging provides us valuable insights into the effects of pandemic isolation and how choir directors can help their students through this challenging time. Be ready to listen quickly because Dr. Savage provides a great deal of information in this brief yet rich conversation. It's Tuesday, November 10th, 2020. This is episode 49 of QCast. Over the past 18 months, YouthQ has provided all its services and features free to anyone who needs them. Beginning in January 2021, we will offer a paid membership for those who want to maximize their use of the YouthQ website and all it provides. Some of our features, such as QCast episodes, will continue to be free. However, there will be new offerings available which will require membership. Watch the monthly newsletter and YouthQ.org for more details from now through the end of this year. YouthQ is here for you.
Carrie, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It should be noted, you know, that you're in my families of origin go back a long ways, actually about 50 years. That's kind of hard to believe. That your parents were some of my earliest mentors when I was a young adolescent. So, you know, they've had a huge impact on my life. And of course, my first memories of you were when you were just probably 5 or 6 years old. And so I've enjoyed watching you through the years. And of course, for a brief time, had you in my student choir when I was a very young director. And so we're just really glad to have you.
It's great to be here.
Looking forward.
It's good to see you again, too.
Yeah, it's good to see you,
even if
it's on Zoom. Exactly. So can you talk for just a bit about how your experiences singing in school choir and church choir as a teenager enriched your life as an adolescent?
Yeah, for sure. I was, as you probably remember, I was a very shy child, and I had a stutter. Really had a lot of social anxiety because of that. Those are some of my early memories. And it was really choir that first kind of brought me out and made me comfortable in front of a crowd. I stopped stuttering. I was able to, you know, speak with confidence. One of my first experiences was a musical with you as the director. And, the fact that you gave me that confidence, I appreciate it so much because it was a significant part. And so that's an early memory that I have. That's probably junior high or so. And then and then even more so in high school, then I was in high school choir. And I was originally in the band in middle school and then switched to choir. And I always joke and say it wasn't just because there's so many girls in the choir. But maybe that was part of it, honestly. But I've always enjoyed singing. And again, in choir, that ability to get up in front of people to sing a solo, quartet in front of large groups. We also had many musicals, and I was able to get starring roles in some of those. And that just really got me out of my shell and made me comfortable being in front of people. And then, of course, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now if I couldn't stand in front of people and act confidently. I trace that back to my early experiences in choir with you and other teachers.
That really warms the heart to hear that because I followed you over the years and your very distinguished career as a brain scientist is amazing. And the interest that is created by that is a wonderful thing. And, I'm wondering what your thoughts are about perhaps the greatest psychological impact of the pandemic. What is it doing to our brains, Carrie?
Yeah, it's, you know, we can only speculate right now. There aren't studies showing how brain function is changing. I'm sure those are going on right now. But what we know for sure is that there's so much uncertainty. Chronic stress, increases in depression have been documented, increase in anxiety disorders, and the impact of social isolation. We are social animals. Much of our brain is devoted to social processing, right? How do we get along in the world with others? How do we read emotions in people's faces? You know, now we can't even read emotions in faces because they're behind a mask. And it makes it hard. All you see are the eyes. And so it's just really this sense of social isolation. And I even told you in my own experience here in Lincoln, you know, I'm a professor at the University of Nebraska. My fiance lives in southwestern Colorado. And so when I'm here, I am socially distant from everyone. I don't get within 6 feet without a mask to anyone. And I can tell you, it's hard. It's a hard thing to go through. And I certainly understand why we are seeing increased rates of depression and anxiety in people because of this isolation. So I think the biggest thing that's really affecting people is the social isolation piece of it. And I think that's also why so many of us have difficulty following the rules, the social isolation rules, because they're just so unpleasant and they go against our instincts. You know, our instincts in our brain are to be social, to be around people, to be close to people. And the pandemic rules go right against that. And just like it's hard in our society to not overeat because there's food around all the time. And, you know, that takes inhibition. It's the same thing with this social isolation, that it's against every instinct in our brain. And we have to override that to follow the rules. And that's part of why following the rules is so hard.
So what do you see that music does for the brain, specifically for the adolescent brain? And of course, what I'm looking here is looking for some kind of connection as to how music can help us survive this social isolation. You have some ideas about that?
Sure. You know, certainly music does affect the developing brain. The developing brain needs certain types of experiences in order to develop, in order to wire itself in that way, right? We're born with certain predispositions for how our brain is wired, but it's experience that really solidifies that. And for adolescents, particularly during social isolation, which I just said was so difficult, that music can play a role of making them feel close to people again. Right. And experience emotions about people. A really interesting thing about music is that in non-musicians, music is primarily an emotional experience. We listen to music to have a certain feeling. And brain function studies, you know, with functional MRI show that as well. You see activation in emotion processing areas like the anterior cingulate cortex when people listen to music. And so it is an emotional experience, and people can put themselves in certain emotions. You know, a lot of us think that music, we're actually seeking out a certain emotion. The reason we pick certain music is it makes us feel a certain way. And maybe some days, you know, I want to be cheered up and I listen to something light and fast. And other days, maybe I'm kind of sad and listen to a song that reminds me of someone. And maybe it makes me feel emotional or even a little teary eyed. We seek out those emotional experiences. And interestingly, then, in highly trained musicians, they certainly experience the emotional aspects as well, but it becomes more of a language. It activates when they listen to music, especially of their specialty, right? You see activation in language areas in the left hemisphere. It's treated much more like a cognitive function, a language function. Certainly, there's still emotional aspects, and I'm sure when you listen to music, you still feel emotions. But you probably also analyze it a little bit, right? And you pay attention to some of the details and whether pieces are coming together in the right way. And that's much like language. And so we think that in trained musicians, music becomes a form of language.
So you may have answered this earlier, Carrie, but are you conducting any studies on cognitive performance and limbic systems, that is emotional systems performance during this period? And if so, are you seeing anything salient on that?
One of our, I'm not doing that research myself. When I was at the University of Kansas Medical Center, one of my graduate students had that interest, and we published a couple of music brain activation studies. But we do have, and I'm not doing anything in music right now during the pandemic, but one of our resident faculty, so I direct the Center for Brain Biology and Behavior, which has 18 resident faculty who actually have their offices here. Of course, now everybody's working from home, but normally they would all
be
here. And one of our faculty and the associate director, Dr. Maital Netta, got a special funding from the National Science Foundation to do COVID, quick COVID research. It's one of these really fast mechanisms where, you know, she found out within a month that she was getting the grant, which is amazing for government.
Right.
And then she had the money a month later. And what she's doing is entirely online, but she's looking at the effects of pandemic stress on emotional responses and how people interpret kind of ambiguous emotions. Like a neutral face. If someone's just looking at you and is not smiling or frowning or anything, many people tend to interpret that as negative, right? You're mad at me. Why aren't you smiling back at me? And so she hypothesizes that this kind of negativity, or I think she calls it negativity bias, will be higher during COVID. But she's the only one I know of in our center who's actually doing COVID-related research right now.
So a lot of our listeners are directors of music groups across the country. We direct choirs in middle schools and high schools in university settings. How can music help to mitigate the impacts of the pandemic? And like more specifically as leaders, how can we maximize that effect in, you know, relieving stress and anxiety and isolation?
Right. Well, as I mentioned, you know, most of us choose music in order to generate certain emotions, right? And so certainly we can generate positive emotions with music, and leaders can encourage the children, their choirs, their bands to remain musically active, to have virtual opportunities with them so they can continue to play, maybe to have a quartet outdoors. Where they can play. I know my son's doing that at Michigan, at the University of Michigan. He's a saxophone major, and they are playing in a very socially distanced way, usually outside, but sometimes indoors in a large auditorium spaced out. But it gives them still that interaction. And so I think encouraging them to remain in music, to get creative about how they can stay in music is very helpful because certainly music is important for brain development.
Great. Well, so what would you like to leave us with as we get ready to ride out of here? Your specialty is a very interesting one. It's the kind of thing where we could sit around and talk all day about it. But if you have some encouragement to give us at this point, you know, everybody's looking for encouragement right now. And so anything that you would say to us that would help us do a better job of what we're doing?
I think the main thing I would say is just what an important experience music is for developing brains. Like I said, it was life-changing for me. I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now without music. So let's not let that slide during the pandemic or afterwards when there's budget cuts. There are going to be budget cuts in schools, right? Funding is going to be a problem over most of the United States. And I know, unfortunately, sometimes it's those programs that are seen as non-essential and they're cut.
Sure.
What I tell you, that music is essential, that the arts are essential, and that children need those outlets and they need those experiences in order for their brains to develop normally. So keep it going, fight for music, and don't let it go away, and do whatever you can do to help your students still remain musically active during this period.
Wow, coming from a world-class scientist, that is really good news to hear that you really get it. And I guess it's because of your own personal investment and experience as a young person that has made that difference. Huh?
That's it. It was really it sent me in a direction that I probably wouldn't have gone otherwise. It definitely changed my life. And you know, I've also studied music some. That's partially why, you know, I chose this graduate student who's interested in music, because I still have that love of music, and that never goes away.
Wow, that's fabulous. Dr. Carrie Savage, thank you so much for joining us today, and we hope to talk to you again in the future.
I hope so too. Hope so very soon.
We hope you'll stop by youthq.org every few days to stay in touch with YouthQ resources during this time of pandemic. New posts and online offerings are always being added to help directors and students face these challenging days. Come see us soon at www.youthq.org. You'll be glad you did. QCast is the podcast of YouthQ, creating soundtracks for life since 1990. Executive producer, Randy Edwards. Producer, Robert Sterling. Online publisher, David Fong. Music by Robert Sterling. Special thanks to Dr. Carrie Savage and Preston Edwards. I'm Cindy Sterling, today's host. We'll see you again next Tuesday on another episode of QCast.